No general answers, there are only partial answers, but the problem is quite general and I hope it's nice. Maybe if time permits I will tell you a little bit about motivation, but I think the problem can be considered as its own. Okay, so what we have? What is the setting? We have a finite, let's say, matrix of independent random variables, but not necessarily IID. I'm sorry. I should look at this. Okay, so we have a finite matrix of independent random variables, and you would like to estimate the expected norm of operator norm of this matrix. So let me fix some notation first. So operator norm will always mean the norm from L2 to L2. By GIJ, we will denote IID, standard normal random variables. By epsilon IJ, IID Rademachers that are plus minus 1 with equal probability. And letter K will always denote the universal constant, which may change from line to line, but doesn't depend on any parameters, unless otherwise statement. Okay, so first, why expected value, not other quantities? Because in usual example, everything strongly concentrates around the mean. So if you know the mean, we more or less know the behavior of this operator norm. So typical proposition into this direction is the following general one. But if these entries are Gaussian, mean zero Gaussian with some non-equal variances, that it deviates from the mean or from the median, it doesn't matter. The order of deviation is determined by the largest entry. So this estimate is quite often not sharp. In many cases it could be sharpened. But anyway, usually maximum of the entries is much smaller than the operator norm, which can easily be seen that is bigger than, for example, norm of each column or norm of each row, which is usually much bigger than each of the entry. And that's why this deviation from the mean is usually of smaller order than the mean itself. Okay, so this proposition is an immediate corollary of general statement well known, I suppose, to most of the participants. Namely, if we have a Lipschitz function on the Gaussian vector with constant L, then the deviation of this Lipschitz function from the mean or from the median is the same as in one-dimensional case, just modulus function or something like this. It's quite easy to see that this proposition may be applied here. Namely, if you look at the function of supremum, some ti xi under some general set t, so here, instead of xi, we rather had xij's, but it doesn't matter, obviously. This order of supremum is determined by the second norm of maximum second norm of on the set T, and if we adapt to our case, when our set T is a product of unit balls, we can easily calculate that this Lipschitz constant is just the maximum of the entries. So first I would like to start with a very classical theorem. Attributed to, can be to Wigner. It's namely mainly attributed to Wigner, but in fact Wigner proved less and or more in some sense. Okay, so Wigner in fact doesn't consider this matrix. It's quite often the matrices considered are self-adjoint matrices or symmetric matrices. That is, for example, we put independent entries over the diagonal and on the diagonal and below the diagonal. We make the matrix symmetric, and then we know that all of the eigenvalues are real, and we may form, for example, the empirical measure with these eigenvalues. And what Wigner proved that under certain normalization by this order of square root of n, this empirical measure tends to the semicircle law. So this is stronger because he not only considered the largest eigenvalue as I am interested here, but all the eigenvalues together. But from these statements, at least formally, it doesn't follow that the largest eigenvalue is not bigger than some constant. It only follows that the proportion of eigenvalues that are bigger is not big. But in fact, it could be quite easy proved that indeed the largest eigenvalue is of a constant. Okay, so I would like to show you, let's say, two proofs of this statement to give you some ideas how these norms can be approximated, and that it's quite often easy, but the methods in this IID case doesn't easily maybe adapt it to non-IID. Okay, so the first method is mainly by the Benedict and Goodman, I think. Okay, so what we have? We have, it is well known that if we have a unit ball in L2, n-dimensional L2 space, then there is a 1 to net d inside the ball of order exponential, so let's say 5 to the n. All right, we would like to estimate the quantity supremum of xy into b2n, sum of xi, yj, gij. This is maybe with modulus, but doesn't matter. This is the operator norm. But since this is 1/2 net, if we restrict only to net, this quantity will increase only by a factor of 4. So this is 4 supremum of xy in the net, sum xi, yj, gij. Okay, and now what can we say about this random variable? So this random variable is again Gaussian, normal, with mean zero, obviously, and variance equals sum of variances, but these two things are in the unit ball. This is a product, so this is smaller or equal than 1. So let's name it somehow gxy. So what this follows, and we don't need any concentration to this, this is one-dimensional thing, is that the tails of these random variables are Gaussian. Okay, so if we have such random variable, not so many of them, then they have Gaussian tails, but it is easy to compute the maximum of them. It doesn't matter that they are dependent, but the maximum of these is smaller or equal than some constant, which can be computed, of logarithm of, let's say, square root of logarithm of how many variables we have here. But remember that d was of the order 5 to the n, so this will be 25 to the n, so this will be another constant square root of n. So this proof is extremely easy, but it hardly uses the fact that everything is quite uniform, that if we put no matter which vectors on this on the border of B2N, we get the same Gaussian random variable. If you would like to adapt it to the non-IID case, let's say with Aij, we will get here k square root of n times maximum of the entries, which is usually very bad estimate. So now let me give you the more sophisticated proof that uses more the structure of this process. And to give you this proof, let me recall theorem. It's called quite often Slepian lemma, but in this version it's Fernic. Theorem, namely, if we have two Gaussian processes indexed by the same set, so two centered Gaussian processes. So Gaussian processes are the processes that any finite distribution is Gaussian, or any linear combination is Gaussian. Okay, and except of this, we know that the process Y is more, let's say, spread out in terms of Gaussian than the process X. So if we compute the variance of the difference, so the process Y has bigger this thing. So then, from this, it follows that E maximum of XT Or in fact, one can take here any convex function. It's smaller or equal than E maximum of Y. If we don't care about the constant 1, this was previously proved by Marcus, I guess. This constant is Fernic. Okay, so let's try to adapt this theorem to this simple case. So what is T? T is obviously B2n times B2n. And what is X? XY is just this sum XI, YJ, GIJ. So if we compute this distance, EXY minus X tilde Y tilde, we'll get that this is sum XI YJ minus XI tilde YJ tilde square. So now we may do the obvious tricks. This is smaller or equal than 2 times sum XI square YJ minus YJ tilde square plus something wrong here.
This is square.
Plus 2, the same thing, but let's say with YJ tilde square XI minus XJ tilde square. This is just sum. Square of the sum is smaller or equal than 2 sum of the squares. And now this thing sum up to 1, so this is 2 times sum or smaller or equal, because we are not necessarily on the sphere. YJ minus YJ tilde square plus 2 sum XI minus XJ tilde square. And it is extremely easy to find the process Y XY, which has this variance structure. So just put YXY, let's say square root of 2 sum XI GI plus square root of 2 sum YJ. These are independent copy of random variable, but we may easily see that this is really the variance of the difference. And what's the main point in this process? That is somehow decoupled, yes? That we have here x's, here y's. So no overlap with them, so it's easy to see that E max x, y in B2n of this process, y x, y is smaller or equal than square root of 2 E. Okay. Maximum over X is, which is sum of GI square plus square root of 2. It's even equal. E sum of GJ square, and this is exactly smaller or equal to 2 square root of 2 square root of N. Okay, so this proof, and this proof has certain advantages. In fact, it can be easily generalized to the more general statement, namely, if we are looking at the norm of this matrix, but from n-dimensional Banach space into another n-dimensional Banach space, this could be estimated by square root of 2 identity from L2n into Yn. Times the expected value of sum GI EI, I guess star. I don't remember. Okay, plus square root of 2 identity from Y into L2, no, from X into L2n. Times the expected value of GJ. This is exactly the same method. We try to decompose and look what are the things. And it is easy also to see that both quantities, that this expression is larger than both quantities. So up to some universal constant,
we are, root of 2 is not necessary.
Yeah, also some.
It's the same argument except that you throw in this middle term.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so these things are. So up to factor 2, this is sharp if you slightly make this proof better. Okay, but we don't care about it. Factor, okay, and in fact, for this matrix, much more is known. It's known how well this concentrates around the right value. I don't know if this is 2 or square root of 2. I don't know.
Is it what we sometimes call Chevet?
Yes, this is Chevet method or Chevet inequality. Okay. So, but I will only care about the behavior, not the concentration, because it's much harder. Okay, so again, in the IID case, we have a very, very general theorem of Scheginer, which, as you may easily see, generalizes this statement, and the theorem is the following. If you have finite matrix n by m of IID mean zero random variables, then this operator norm is in fact comparable with some universal constant to the maximum norm of columns and maximum norm of rows. And it was proved recently by Scheginer, and I would like to comment on this proof, because this proof shows the third method, in fact, most commonly used in this area. Okay, so his proof is based on the following lemma. Now, in this lemma, we don't have random variables, we just have random permutation and random signs. Okay, so we fixed a matrix, Cij, and by triple norm, we denote this norm, which is on the left, maximum norm of columns and maximum norm of rows. Okay, and what we take? We multiply this random matrix by random signs, plus minus 1, but except of this, we put a random permutation and random permutation, different permutation to different rows. So we somehow a little bit merge this matrix. But notice that if the things are IID, then it doesn't matter, because any permutation of rows produces the same distribution, because the things are IID. So in fact, here exchangeability is important. Okay, and also mean zero and symmetric. This is not a big point. Okay, and what is the idea of the proof? So he proves this thing that if we take expected value over all signs and all the permutation of the piece power of this operator norm, and we divide everything by this triple norm, so that the sum of columns will be still smaller than 1, because if we mesh everything, it can change, then it's up to log n, it's of the constant growth k to the p. Okay, and the idea of the proof, this is something that it's commonly used in this area, as far as I noticed. Okay, so how can we bound operator norm? The trivial answer is we can't bound operator norm by the sum of all eigenvalues to the piece power and take the one piece root of this. Okay, so in other words, we can compute, instead of operator norm, we can compute a Schatten norm. Schatten norm is usually bigger. We know that sum of the powers is bigger, but if we are of order k take of order log n, then we know that up to a constant it has to be the same, because L log n norm on Rn is the same as L infinity norm. Okay, and for even powers, this Schatten norm has a very easy expression, because what we have to do, we have to take A star A to the k's power and compute the trace of this. So this is this expression. If this matrix would be symmetric, this expression will be much more easier to write, because we'll have to go from I1 to J1, then from J1 to I2, etc. But since here, but for the complex case, it's not big difference if we consider up to a constant, yes, because we may always take real part and imaginary part. The trouble started if we really want this sharp constant. Okay, and then we plug in for A this random thing, and we try to compute here expected value of this. Notice that there will be a lot of cancellation during to this signs plus minus one, because any Walsh, expected value of any Walsh is zero. So in order not to cancel everything, each epsilon ij must appear even number of times. So in other words, we will be counting some closed passes on this set 1 to n, coming through each edge even number of times, and using quite heavy combinatorics, I would say. It's 5 pages of computation. He was able to estimate this exactly for what is required, so for k equal more or less log n. And from this lemma, it's easily by get the theorem by Helder's inequality. Something.
So
like
I'm
this.
Not sure mm-hmm. if you're exactly right. Isn't there another proof by Fieri and Convolsh where they can go up to some power of n at the moment?
Yeah, but I think under this general assumption, this power is not the biggest thing, because in fact by the concentration, if you have here, let's say power one, when applying concentration of Rademacher processes, you may get up to the power required. So this is not the thing. The thing is to estimate any moment, I don't know, first, second. Showing that this is this exactly like this.
CIJ, right? CIJ.
Sorry?
CIJ everywhere?
Yeah, CIJ. So.
CIJ is
so
simple. It's pretty
basic. So here are CIJ, but here are permutations, yes?
Okay. No. There is no J, is it? Right?
Sigma I of J.
Okay.
So this is the final answer. You cannot get more in the IID case. But the problem is what if we don't assume IID? Okay, so let's try to estimate the thing from below.
And still independent. Yeah,
still independent. If we lost independence, it's quite hard. Okay, so what we can do? We can do basically this thing that norm of matrix is bigger than norm of rows and norm of columns, and look how well does it work. And in the Gaussian case, we can compute everything. So because these are again independent Gaussian vector valued random variables, so for this computation is trivial. And it turns out that for Gaussian entries, this estimation from below gives like maximum of rows of deterministic matrix, maximum of columns of deterministic matrix, plus some Olish like norm, which is basically the expected value of maximum of the biggest entry. So the first question, which is open, I guess, is how good is this estimate? So can it be reversed? Somehow, at the moment I doubted it, but I'm not 100% true. Okay, so the next, we may weaken the statement, and this Olish function, it goes to zero extremely rapidly, as you may notice. It's e to minus t squared infinity. So this Olish norm is bounded by any LP norm. So we may ask whether the estimation by LP norm instead of this phi norm is satisfied. Okay, and before formulating the partial answer to the second problem, let me show you which method we may use, which advantage we may take from knowing that we are dealing with Gaussian process. In the moment, I will show you how to get from Gaussian random variable to other ones. Okay, so one thing was this Fanick inequality, but usually to apply this, it requires a lot of symmetries if you would like to find something nice that bound the process. So, but there are two general methods that work for any expected value of supremum of any process, Gaussian process, centered one. Okay, so the first thing, which is usually easier to compute, this is Dudley's entropy method. So if we have a Gaussian or sub-Gaussian process, then the expected value of supremum is smaller or equal than the integral of 0 to infinity of square root of log of covering numbers. So we try to find the minimal number of balls with respect to the natural metrics determined by this process, namely this basic coming from variance of the difference that cover T. Okay, so this estimate works quite well if the process is, let's say, uniformly spreaded over the set T. The trouble started if it is not the case. And unfortunately, for matrices, it is not the case, even for the simplest matrix. I wrote 1 by infinity, but you should understand that this is 1 by n matrix, which n very large. It has been shown by Talagrand, but I think it was known previously, but this Dudley method doesn't apply here. If we have an ellipsoid, we cannot use just this integral to bound the process. And for ellipsoid, it's trivial to compute supremum, yes, because it's like L2 norm. Okay, so there is one very general tool in Gaussian processes, so called majorizing measure technique, established by Fernick and Talagrand. And if you want to bound an empirical and Gaussian process or sub Gaussian process from above, from sub Gaussian, for Gaussian it's sharp. Okay, what we have to look? We have to look at over the infimum of all probability measures on T of the quantity supremum of T for all the points T in T and the integral 0 to infinity square root of log 1 over mu bt epsilon. So somehow the advantage of this formulation, looking at Dudley formulation, is that here we really look what is going on locally with the process, not only globally but locally, and it's quite easy to see that this Fernick-Talagrand implied Dudley, namely, if you would like to construct the measure, knowing that this integral is finite, we put uniform measure on all let's say center of these balls with radius 2 minus n, and then somehow normalize it by 1 over n squared, let's say, so that it will sum to a probability measure. Okay, so one side is trivial. However, the problem with this majorizing measure technique is that it is really the case that we can compute something using it. Usually the normal use of it is that if we compare two processes, like in Fernick lemma, but if we have sub-Gaussian process and another Gaussian process, and we can compute something for Gaussian, and this sub-Gaussian is dominated by this Gaussian, by using this general theorem, we can get something for this sub-Gaussian. But in fact, it's really rarely the case when we can estimate this supremum of the Gaussian process, constructing really the measure. Even in the case of these ellipsoids, it's not a trivial task. It was done by Talagrand, and it uses some that this norm defined by ellipsoid is Smoot's norm, and he somehow compute these covering numbers, but in a more clever way. So this is, but maybe I'm not completely sure. Maybe there is some general method that will tell you that if we have this majorizing measure on all ellipsoids, then we are able to construct majorizing measure on the whole space of matrices. I don't know. I tried a bit, but I'm not an expert in this. So maybe there is general method using majorizing measure to solve problem one. I tried, I failed, but maybe. it's the case. Okay, so now let me formulate two main results. So first theorem is partial answer to problem two, namely for L4 norm, problem two is satisfied. And notice why it can be interesting is that if all entries are equal, basically all of three terms are of order square root of n. So this could be seen as some generalization of this first. Sorry? Assumptions are that these Gijs are independent Gaussians, and Aij is any finite matrix. So you can go to infinity also if this thing on the right is bounded. Okay, so if you have n by n, this all three terms are of the same order square root of n. So that's why it could be interesting. No, and also it's a little bit by the motivation. Okay, so the next theorem is formal, as you may see, more general. Yes, because we don't have a Gaussian entries, we have arbitrary mean zero entries, and if we plug in Gaussian here, Aij, Xij, we up to a constant get the quantities above, because expected value of Aij, Gij square is exactly this, and the expected value of the force is up to a constant free comparable to Aij force. Okay, so this may seem as formal a stronger theorem, but in fact it's not very hard to see that theorem 1 implied theorem 2, and I would like to give you the proof, because it's very easy. So first thing is quite general observation in Banach spaces, but usually if we have to prove something for mean zero random variables, it usually suffices to prove it for symmetric random variables. So instead of Xij, we symmetrize entries by taking independent copy. So by Jens inequality, since we may take one expectation inside, this clearly dominates it. But this random variable is symmetric. So we may add independent Rademacher sequence, multiply it, and with its distribution will still be the same. And now use the triangle inequality. And obviously the distribution of this thing is the same as the distribution of this thing. So this is twice of expected value of some symmetric random variable. And it is easy to see that if you plug in epsilon ij, xij into the formula from on the right-hand side of theorem, we'll get the same thing as for xij. So it's enough to bound this symmetric. Okay. So first, the next observation is that theorem 1 holds for Gaussian, but it's easy to see that it holds also for Rademacher. And in fact, these two statements are equivalent. Why? Because, okay, we may express Gaussian as modulus of Gaussian times independent Rademachers by the symmetry. We may take the Fubini theorem, so this will be expected over Rademachers, expected over Gaussian, put expectation over Gaussian inside, this will be a constant, so we'll get. But this thing dominates the other. The other inequality is not true, but if we have such estimate, it's not hard to show that if we have for Rademachers, we have it for Gaussian. So in fact, maybe you prefer to prove problem 2, at least problem 2 for Rademachers. With problem 1, if it's proved for Rademachers, it's not certainly clear that it will be for Gaussian, but with slight change of phi, it will be. Okay, so we know now this theorem for Rademachers instead of Gaussians, and we may use Hinch and Kahan inequality to bond instead of first moment, second moment. So if we take the squares of these three quantities, we with slightly worse constant, we'll get some of these three things. Okay, so now what we do. Okay, so we know that we are in the symmetric case. So we may, instead of xij, we may write epsilon ij xij. We may use Fubini theorem for this conditioning on xij. We may use this inequality for proved for Rademachers, and we get that this is bounded by the sum of these three random quantities. And we have to show that all three of them are comparable to this right-hand side of desired inequality. So with the last quantity, this is trivial. We use Schwarz or Jensen inequality by the concavity of square root. So this is not a problem. Now, with one of these quantities, obviously they are symmetric, so if you bond one, we get the other. Okay, so what we do, we subtract the expected value and use the thing that maximum of the sum is smaller than sum of the maxima. Okay, now, again, maximum of the sum, we bound by square root of sum of squares. So it looks like we are losing something, but in fact we are not. We put expected value inside, and what we may notice, we may either notice, if you prefer, that this thing inside are orthogonal because they are mean zero, or if you prefer probabilistic flavor, you may look that this expected value is nothing but the sum of variances. And variance is smaller or equal. So this tells that we may commute this expected value with the sum. So, and variance is obviously smaller than force norm. So this proof is very easy, but theorem 1 implies theorem 2.
So the remark on the bottom of the other side is a different proof of the epsilon, is that right?
This remark?
Yeah.
No, this shows that if we have thing for Gaussian, we have thing for Rademachers. Yes, we use Kinchen-Hahn because we have bounded a priori the okay, there is lacking something. We are lacking. Parenthesis. This is... Yes, we bound this by this, and this is bounded by theorem 1, yes, but sum of three quantities, and here are the same quantities by square. Okay, so let me give you a very rough idea of the proof of this main theorem. So theorem 1. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I will go very quickly over the proof. Okay, so the first lemma used in the proof is very, very simple. Is that if we have the random variables which has exponential time tiles, mainly the maximum of them is of order log times the number of these quantities. So this is a slight variation because we would like to put logarithm inside, and here don't have logarithm. So the proof is just integration by parts of integration by parts, and then probability that maximum is bigger than something is smaller than sum of probabilities, that each of the quantities is bigger. We do the computation. Now, you may ask why we assume exponential times, but we are dealing with Gaussian random variable. This is reason why is that we, in fact, are dealing with squares of Gaussian random variables, because if we take, for example, maximum over xi there, then we will have L2 norm. Okay. So if we apply this lemma to these quantities, and using Gaussian concentration, we will get the... Okay, it doesn't matter. Next technical statement. The bad thing is this C here, but this C is unavoidable because the square of two, square of sum is not smaller than sum of squares. We have to pay a little with this, but we have this thing. Okay, and what is main technical lemma here? It's the following statement. That Now we have delta quantity, which, okay, in general we would like to have L4 norm. This is not L4 norm, but this is, let's say, maximum of L4 norms of all rows. So something a little bit similar. This is a little bit technical. But what we have here some these random variables appearing in the computation of norm. We have here subtract expected value of this thing, and we cannot say that this minus this will be bounded, but if we pay a little bit, dependent on the delta, so delta squared times 2 to the n half is like L4 norm, square of L4 norm, in all this maximum over j will be the same. Okay, then this is bounded, and the only thing we assume is that there are not too many variables. Okay, and then very, very short idea how to use this technical lemma to prove the theorem. So first we permute indices so that the L4 norms of columns and L4 norms of rows will be decreasing. So this is obvious thing. Now, if we get this permutation, we somehow divide the matrices on the part over the diagonal and below the diagonal. Okay, and in the part below we take supreme over y's. In the part above we take other way around. And so we have only supreme over b to n, not b to n times b to n. And now we treat these two cases separately. Namely, we prove that below the diagonal, under this assumption of monotonicity, which is crucial, otherwise it's not true, this quantity is smaller than not sum of three quantities, as we desired in the theorem one statement, but just two quantities. So it may seem that this is harder to prove that something is smaller than sum of two quantities, but in fact, if you know that it is true, it can be sometimes easier, because we have less things to be taken care of. Okay, and I think I don't have time to go into details, but if you have this technical lemma, it's pretty easy to do it. The one combinatorial thing is that instead of looking supreme over the ball, we take some special net, as in this technical lemma, namely the net consisting of the points whose squares are dyadics. Because we may make the computation how many of these points are, for example, with each of times bigger than, let's say, 1 over 2 to the L. Okay, I think I stop here. Thank you.
No, I just wanted to comment that there is something special about the exponent 4 because the existence of the fourth moment is necessary and sufficient actually for boundedness of the norm in this normalization. So maybe,
maybe
there is something
to that.
In the general case, for general environment, you cannot have a statement if there is no.
Yeah.
Okay. More questions? Thanks a lot.